Like, I think I got really knocked over by the title. These are words which we people of my vintage knows very well. Remember the days of the Beatles and whatever name he is. What's the writer? Paul McCartney. Yeah. And I was quite surprised that young people like you still know this type of song. Maybe it's the words, right? If you look at it, whispering words of wisdom, let it be. There are two things which you got to look at. One is wisdom, and the other one is let it be. And how to link these two? It's quite difficult to link these sort of things. You know. They seem to be very much opposite of the other. Right? Because to a lot of us, we seem to have a different thinking of wisdom. So when I'm given this particular topic, I got to check on what we actually mean by wisdom. Not the Buddhist way, because I know what the Buddhists mean by wisdom, but it's how the English word, what the English word means as wisdom. So it's a word derived from wise, right? And this wise also it's got connection with wit. It's also connected with wiz, and that's why we got things like wizards. Wizards are supposed to be wise people, but unfortunately, because they belong to a different religion, therefore wizards are no good. So, I've been going through the 10 or 15 entries in the dictionary. I managed to get the idea that wisdom, in our meaning, it means having or exercising sound judgment. The sound judgment is something which is important. Now, what do you want to have sound judgment for? Have you ever thought to say a person has got a very good sound judgment? What does that mean? Yeah. Not to be right. To be right, if you have got sound judgment, if you're right, you're wrong. Sound judgment is to allow us to get out of trouble or to avoid trouble. Do you agree on it? You got a good sound judgment, you see, okay, this is going to be happening like that, then I avoid it. If you have a good sound judgment, you're in trouble, a good judgment will allow you to be free from it. Don't get involved with this sort of things. Now, that is the closest I can get to the Buddhist wisdom. The Buddhist wisdom, according to the scripture, is to be able to see things as they really are, which means that you understand things a lot better. And this seeing things as they really are will get us out of trouble. Right? The Buddhist word for trouble is dukkha. Now if you look at wisdom, it's got nothing to do with intelligence or cleverness. Absolutely intelligent people and very clever people always get themselves in trouble. Actually, if you belong, you have got a IQ of 120 above, this Mensa people, right? You'll find that these people get into trouble a lot more than normal people. Right? And the people who really don't get into trouble are the stupid ones, whom we call idiots, right? Meaning the IQ of an IQ number less than 60. Right? So, when it's established that wisdom does not equal intelligence, or intelligence does not equal wisdom. Right? I think all of you are very intelligent looking. So, but the fact that you come to this talk possibly could mean to reflect your slight lack of wisdom. Right? And the Buddha has got plenty to give us. Right? Now, when we talk about intelligence, the other side, the other end of intelligence, or the opposite of intelligence, or sorry, when we talk about wisdom, the other end of wisdom is ignorance. Wisdom in Pali is called panya, or in Sanskrit is called panya. And ignorance is called avidya, avidya or avidya in the Buddhist languages. So, this ignorance does not mean that we are stupid. We can function well, we can eat, sleep, we can earn a lot of money, blah blah blah, and be a very successful person. But there is still ignorance. Because the definition of ignorance in Buddhism is not able to see things as they really are. This is a very important part of how we look at wisdom. Now, what do you mean by things as they really are? It goes back to the other very basic Buddhist teachings of impermanence, right? Non-self or non-essence, and suffering or dukkha. As all Buddhists should know, existing in this world, existing as a human being, especially for us, is suffering. We don't suffer like, you know, when you talk about suffering, it means life is full of a lot of unsatisfactoriness. Life is not very often good to us. When it's good to us, it's still got unsatisfactoriness. Think of the last time when you were very successful in the exams. What happens after that? The moment you get your marks, 99.9, where's the 0.1 more? Or you get 100. I wish that I could get a bit more. So that's the thing, you know. Or you get 100 and you get 2 or 3 of your classmates having 100. So why can't I be better than them? So all these sort of things is a form of dukkha. We are always grabbing for something. When we are unhappy, we try to grab for happiness. When we are happy, we grab for more happiness. And when we get more happiness, we go for more and more until the time comes when we can't be happy anymore and we feel unhappy. So they're all, in other words, we're all going in a cycle, a circle. We are going in, swimming around in what we call samsara, or this sea of suffering. I'm not trying to be pessimistic about it, but that is reality. That is the truth of existence. You exist, or I exist, we got a lot of things which are not very satisfactory at all. And our satisfaction cannot be satisfied. Can you ever think of a person who is really, really content with life or happy? And you think that you can do that, think of when was the last time you are really happy? And how long did the happiness last? Okay? So, the reason why we cannot do, we have this attachment, is because of our nature. Right? Human nature is like that. Coming from ignorance, we tend to develop things which we like and dislike. Now, how do you link these two together? Ignorance, like and dislike. It's linked to the thing that all things are impermanent. Everything changes. You change, I change. The weather changes. The mood changes. So we all have changes all the time. And if we cannot come to terms with these changes, if you want to go against the changes, not to swim along with it or not to flow along with it, then we get trouble. For example, a person who clings very much to his youth, right? I want to be young all the time. For you all it's alright because you're still young. Right? If come to my age, I still think that I want to be young and I cling on to be young, you guess what's going to happen? I go to the gym there, you know, make myself then Botox on the face, right? And then get the bald patch there, you know, hair transplant, right? And then start to want to feel young again. Right? Maybe I got my old wife at home, I just divorce her and go for a girl of 25. Right? Or if it's even the 25 could be too old, you want to be really young. So, these sort of things, and while doing that sort of things, you get into a lot of problems. And even thinking about it, supposing I don't want to accept the fact that I'm growing old, I get problem. And when I get problem, a lot of people around me will share my problem as well. Supposing I'm going, I just divorced my wife of 40 years and said, okay, you go, I'm going after a young girl. What will my daughters and sons think? Right? So, people are, you get dukkha yourself, and you get dukkha to other people. And when we are attached to health, good health, right? We always want good health. But if we are too obsessive about it, what happens? That's why you see the chemist shop booming all the time. You sell vitamins and everything. It's not that people shouldn't have good health, but we are obsessed with it. When you are very strongly attached to it and being obsessed to it, then you get problems. And when you're so used to good health, and all of a sudden, when you fall sick, what's going to happen? You feel very unhappy with it. And then unhappiness comes from two sources. One is the real sickness. The other one is the value-added sickness. We add on to it, the mental side of it. The Buddha said, growing old is natural. Right? Changes will make you grow old. Having ill health is natural. Right? One Achan Brahm, you heard of Achan Brahm? Once he said, says when I go and see a doctor, I don't say what's wrong with me. He says what's right with me. Right? Literally, every one of us got to fall sick. Right? I'm quite sure none of you are never free from sickness. Right? Maybe even you don't get flu or cold or whatever, you might get something. Maybe like a broken arm, broken leg. So all these things is there. Right? And if we don't come to terms with it, now I'm not saying that we resign to the fact, we are not saying that, oh, I'm sick, I do nothing about it. But when I'm sick, what should I do? See a doctor, try to get cure and all those things. But if it takes 2 months to get cured, okay, it takes two months, right? Just be with it. So that is the way to look at it. Things are unsatisfactory. We cannot get along with it, and therefore we get into a state of suffering. Now, there are other things which are quite different from these physical things. I mean, experiencing things like when you really like and you can't get it, what happens? Pulling. And the things which you don't like and yet you cannot get rid of. I don't like to sit for exams, and yet I've got to sit for exams. So that is the thing. It brings us that way. So all this, right, is very well explained in the Buddhist text. When you exist, life is like that. And if you're not careful, when we are strongly attached to certain things, right, then it'll end up in a lot of trouble for us. And the trouble comes in the form of unsatisfactoriness. I cannot use words to explain this unsatisfactoriness, but examples can give you. Right? Supposing you got a partner, a boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever, and then you fall in love, and then all of a sudden after 2 months, the girlfriend or boyfriend says bye bye. That feeling, that is called unsatisfactoriness. Right? And okay. Now, all this unsatisfactoriness arises again, and repeat what I said before, is because we cannot see the true nature of things. Things change. You love somebody, you might change, the other person might change. So we've got to be prepared for it. If we do not know about all these things, then that is ignorance. If we know a thing and we do not want to accept it, then that is delusion. Right. So the word avijja can mean two things in our language: ignorance and delusion. And from this ignorance and delusion arises attachment. Right. Attaching for things which we like and attaching to things which we dislike. How we attach to things which we dislike is, if you have something which you hate, the more you think about it, the more you get closer to you. So the Buddha gave us a lot of tips, a lot of guide on how to get rid of it. So if we can, we know the sort of the flow chart: ignorance, attachment, dukkha. And in between, of course, I'll explain a bit more later on what are in between that. So the lack of wisdom is that. Wisdom means to be able to see it clearly. When somebody leaves you, or when a partner or lover leaves us, okay, just know that they're gone. If you can accept that without really banging your head on the wall or going with a gun and shoot the other person, then you've got some wisdom. Now, as I said before, we are not born with wisdom. It's only when you come into the teachings of the Buddhist teachings, then we can look closer into this Buddhist wisdom. And the way to look into this Buddhist wisdom is we divide wisdom into three levels. The first level of wisdom is, for us average, quite intelligent people. We can hear, we can see, we can read, we can hear. So whatever we see in other people, whatever we read in the books, whatever we hear about wise things being said by people, and in the case of Buddhism, is we hear through our Dharma talks. There are a lot of informations which we can get from outside. There are, I think, more than enough Dharma books, and I'm quite sure a lot of us don't read all of them. So when we start to read all these things, it gives us a lot of ideas. These ideas can be anything: how to live a good life, how to do this, how to do that, how to achieve enlightenment, and so on and so forth, Nibbana, everything. Now, most of us will be able to understand it, because we can understand language, we can understand whatever, the concepts, the ideas, and so on. Now, this is the first level of wisdom. It's something which we learn. And the second level of wisdom is slightly more than that. If a person who accepts everything he reads and writes, accepts everything, then he has got a problem. In the case, the wisdom is very minimum. But the next level needs a bit more wisdom, a bit more intelligence in the case. It's transferring this knowledge of what we call conceptual knowledge, into a reflection. We think about it. Just know that whatever is I heard, whatever I see, whatever I read, are they right or not? Is it acceptable or not? Does it make sense or not? Right? The ability to make sense out of things is the beginning of the real wisdom. You see, okay, if I tell you that Buddha can fly, you say, oh yeah, you say Buddha can fly, Buddha really flies, then that's being stupid. Because have you ever seen the Buddha flying or not? So, have you ever seen Buddha or not? So, that's why sometimes when I talk to people, they start telling me all sorts of things they believe in. So don't believe in the thing. It's in the books. The Buddha tell you, don't believe, investigate. So when it comes to a lot of things, we investigate using this mind of ours. We have got this intelligence. You can tell me that I've just seen tears coming off that image there. The Buddha is crying because the world is doesn't listen to my words, and therefore the Buddha is crying. I can see, is there really tears or not? If it's really tears, I'll just check and see, right? What DNA and all these things. Science giving all the things. But a lot of people won't. Right? They just accept on face value. Oh yeah, then the image must be a real, sacred image. Right? So the second level is observe and investigate. Right? Just look and then investigate. Find out for yourself whether that makes sense or not. And when both of them, if you pass two of those things, your information comes in and you think that it makes sense, then the third level is to practice. There are a lot of teachings which we come across, right, in the Buddhist teachings. You can find out. If somebody were to teach you to say, okay, now,
I'm going to follow this. The Buddha said this. And when you sit down and meditate, in no time, you will be able to float and you'll be able to fly.
So, what sort of investigation should you do? Even before I sit down and spend my time doing all meditating for that purpose, I'll think, what good does it make for me to float up? What good does it make for me to fly? And how far can I fly? If I can fly from here to Malaysia, how long does it take? Whether I'm going to be comfortable or not. Right? If I'm going to fly up in the stratosphere, I'll be dead by then. See? The other day I flew up in the plane, I saw minus 15 degrees outside. So, what is the purpose of all these things? So, when we start to be more critical about things, then we can start to make up our mind to see whether this is going to work or not. There's the cases of people who do things without really investigating, without really understanding. Right? And when you come into Buddhism, this will be the advice I give you. Just be very sure of what you are doing first. Don't just invest your time in hearsay. Whatever you tell you, don't listen to it. Just check through. Right? Investigate. And in that respect, you will not be wasting your time, and the most important is you won't be getting into any trouble. So the third level of wisdom is to practice. When you, after investigating all those things, I say, okay, I'll go and make myself do it, and then that practice will bring us into the true wisdom. It's a wisdom arising from understanding. Wisdom cannot arise from belief. You just look at people who believe, they are really got little wisdom. If they need to believe, then they will forsake wisdom. So when we start to do that, slowly, as time goes by, depending on how much effort we invest in, then you find that you'll be able to get used to it. Now, a lot of the Buddha's teachings is focused on this training. This training or this development of this practical wisdom. Because when you practice it and you experience it, you will know it, and that knowledge is yours. When you hear something, that knowledge is somebody else's knowledge. You're only taking it. But it doesn't mean that we do not want to hear. Hear it, digest it in your brains, and eventually just try, do it, and if it really works, then go further. Right. So it is a process this way, and that makes up that three level of wisdom which we talk about in Buddhism. Right. When a wise person is no different from a stupid person in looks. Right. A wise person differs from other people in that they are able to discern things a lot better. But we no longer accept things at face value or at what people say. But it doesn't mean that when somebody who is famous says something, we must take it as truth. The Buddha says, I mean, this is one I learned from one of my teachers. He says, if you hold up my hand and say there's a coin, people who have got no wisdom will either believe me or not believe me. Those who want to go for wisdom and say, open up and see. So we always go for the third alternative. Check, practice, and see for yourself. Now, this practical wisdom, as I said before, is yours. Nobody can tell you whether you are wise or not. It's only you who can do it. Who is very well aware of it. How are you aware of it? It's just that when you start to do things, you can see things a lot easier. Getting along with things, accept things better. Right? And in a way, our life will be much more relaxed than otherwise. Right? If we do not start to develop this wisdom, you find that they are always getting into problems. Sometimes it gets problems so big that we are in a state of depression and all these things. So in other words, when we practice Buddhism, we can make do with a lot of those difficult mental problems which you're going to have later on. And I think Buddhism is a good way of preventing people from having depression. You see a monk who's got virtually nothing, walks with a rope and eats just a meal a day, they don't feel depressed. Whereas if I were to do that, I think I'd get depressed. That's why I need Buddhism more than the monk. Okay? But the whole thing is, we do not wait until we get into that horrible state. Right? Now, when we are alright, everything seems to be alright, it's a good time to practice. But unfortunately for a lot of us, when things are good, we always have excuses. Right? Too early, too late, I got something else to do, I got to play badminton, I got to go and be with my girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. What else? I got to watch TV, a nice program on MasterChef and all these things. Right? So, eventually we don't want to get into practice. Again, if you want to go for wisdom, try to allow yourself some time. Make sure that I'm going to do this at least 1 or 2 hours a day. Right? Don't have to say I must do it 8:05 or whatever. Right? Just I must do it. And what to do? What do you mean by doing? Now that doing is the practice of what the Buddha is trying to teach us. That doing is going on to the path of wisdom. As you practice, that wisdom level increases. We do have a little bit in us. If not, we cannot come into to understand Buddhism. Once you understand it, make use of it. The Buddha is not meant for you to pray. It's good to bow to the Buddha, it's good to chant in front of the Buddha. But bowing and chanting do not bring about a lot of wisdom. What brings about a lot of wisdom is the study of the mind, understanding how the mind works. Right? And when you know how the mind works, then it allows us a chance to be able to choose when things arise. We have got a choice. Say for example, if I'm in the past when I start to get angry, right, I got no control over it. It just come, overtake the whole thing, you're being blanketed by anger and you become angry yourself. Right? And in our anger we destroy ourselves or we hurt ourselves, we hurt other people. Right? But when you start to practice, then studying, because you know that the mind precedes our physical action. So you can see the mind, how it comes up slowly. And then, when it comes to the stage where you are aware of it, then you got a choice. Go this way and get angry. You hurt yourself, you hurt others. Or stop. Don't get angry. Then nothing happens. So, we have a decision. We can make a decision. And the decision is entirely on you. Right, on the practitioner. So the practitioner of Buddhism is to be able to see the workings of the mind. Right? When you're talking about meditation and all these things, it's precisely just that. If you meditate to fly, you meditate to gain supernatural power so that you can make more money, well, you can try that. Right? But one thing I know that really works is if you meditate to understand the workings of the mind, then it's much easier for us to be in control of ourselves. Because the mental action precedes all our physical action. The mental action precedes the speech. The mental action precedes our movements and so on. So you can really monitor how the mind works. And as I said before, you have got a choice. Go this way and get into trouble. Stop, get no trouble. Now, we always tell people to stop. If you are angry, you tell them, don't get angry. You get more angry. If people are scared, you tell them, don't be scared. They imagine a lot more and make themselves more scared. So this is the way human beings behave. But if we can
work on ourselves, if we are got the same thing as other people, but if we can work on ourselves, then we know it's happening this way. Therefore, I try to stop it. And in doing so, we can stop a lot of actions which will cause harm to ourselves and other people. When we get angry, harm comes to ourselves first. Before we can say anything to hurt other people, we are already harming ourselves. And when you say that, you hurt other people, and it doesn't finish there. Right? If the other people harbor grudge against you, it comes back again, you get more angry next time, and it goes on and on, it spreads. Right? If we are not aware of trying to give up all these things, then what happens is we are going to carry the burden. We are going to make others carry the burden. Right? And I don't think we are going to be very, very peaceful. And that is only from one example of anger. Other things, fears, worries, disappointments, you can use the same argument here as what I said just now. Just see how it happens. Now, these sort of things are quite well explained in the Buddha's teachings. He even tells you where it comes from. It comes from you yourself, nobody else. If you say that other people make you angry, then think twice. What actually happens? If I don't want to get angry, you can't make me angry. That is because I got no will. Therefore, I succumb to what you say. Right? Therefore, I get angry. So, if you understand that, what's going to happen? I hear something. You try to make me angry, alright. Say something nasty to me. Okay. Now, just now in your meditation, what was the training? Hear something, let go. Go back to what you are doing, right? So if I'm peeling potatoes and then you come and say abusive things to me, okay, I just hurt you. Come back and peel my potatoes. Go a second time, hurt you, come and peel my potatoes. Do that many times, you won't get angry. And don't worry about them, other people. So that is the way we do. Now when you are worried, the same thing. Maybe check and see whether your worries are well-founded or not. Sometimes our worries are through our imagination. Now, supposing your assignment is due tomorrow, and by midnight tonight you still haven't done the assignment, then there's a cause for worry. Because you haven't done it. But if you send your assignment in and just worry whether it's going to be good or bad or whatever, then there's a waste of your time. Waste of our mental energy, because you do not know what's going to happen. The thing has been submitted and it's already no longer in your hands. What comes, what you accept it. But of course, before that, the Buddha has taught us, right, doing things with good effort. Do everything well. You're not competing with people, but you're actually working for yourself. If we have got an assignment, okay, I do it in due time, do it well, well researched, blah blah blah, you send in, that's it. But when you come to results, get it. And I know when I was a student, a lot of my friends, I never worry about things, because I'm glad. When I was young, I got that ability to let go. So we all study together, and then after that, sit for exams, and then those days, between the exam and the results coming out, is about 2 months. Those poor fellows will be worried for 2 months. I'll be down to Kuala Lumpur to go and see movies. I'll be going down to parties and all this. So, when you have done the thing, make sure that you do everything well. So doing all these things is part and parcel of the wisdom. Checking, developing wisdom that way. And that wisdom is practical. It accumulates in you. As you go on, you find that, I can see things a lot better than years ago. Okay, until now, are there any questions? Do you think they agree with me or not? I'm quite sure some of you won't agree with me. All right, so now, what has wisdom got to do with let it be?
There is a particular sutta written by, I mean not written but preached by the, supposed to be preached by the Buddha. Right? It's called, my favorite sutta anyway, and that's supposed to be the Bible for everybody who wants to do meditation. Because that particular one, the Buddha mentioned all the things to do with meditation. Right? What is expected of it, what to do with it, and things like that. Right? So in that sutta, the Buddha advised his monks and all the practitioners, right, to be aware of the mind, right, starting of awareness of the body. Right. Because when we in our daily life we do things we think we do things naturally, instinctively. Right. But sometimes this so-called instinct brings us a lot of problems. Right. If I follow my instinct, sometimes I think that there's no, when I go down the stairs, I think this is the last one, my instinct, and then there's another one. So I overstep the thing and fall down. Right? So we get into accidents, we get into all sorts of things. Right? And if you follow our instinct, sometimes the instinct is wrong. Right? A lot of people seem to be proud of the sixth sense. Right? Yeah, I can feel it in my vibes, sort of things. Right? Don't trust it. It's just by chance that it happens. So, not all of us are clairvoyants. Not all of us are, what do you call it, prescient or prescient. Right? We cannot not sense the thing in future, but we seem to be able to know it. Right? If we can have the sort of ability to, or you can train for that, then I can go and play roulette, see? And say, okay, the next one is going to be 20. And next one is going to be 13, right? And can become rich that way. But we can't. Nobody has got the ability to. People claim that. But if they claim that, then can they see the future? Can they see what's going to happen to them the next day? If they can tell your fortune, why can't they tell their own fortune? So this is my argument. So when we train for to watch the body, we got to know what the body is doing. Be aware of it. Sometimes our body and mind don't work together. When we walk or wait in the bus stand, do we actually wait for the bus? Where does the mind wander to? And my favorite thing is, what do you do last night when you brush your teeth? Where is your mind? So the mind always works not in tandem with the bodily action. So the training of the Buddha is to let us know what the body is doing. The mind should be able to follow the body. So in our very basic training is our body moves when you breathe. So the mind should be able to watch the breathing. The mind should be able to follow the body, in breath, out breath. Of course, sometimes in our meditation we breathe in, rising, falling, but after a while it becomes a mantra. Right? Then suddenly you might notice that when you're noting rising, the abdomen is actually falling. Right? So, got to be aware of that. Knowing your mind can go astray. Right? When it goes astray, bring it back. Keep on bringing it back. Right? And knowing the body, and also knowing the other movements which we do, in the script, in the sutta, the Buddha mentioned about being aware of standing up, lying down, stretching your arms, going to the toilet, everything. And for a lot of people I know, when they go to the toilet, they are not actually doing what they were doing. They always grab a book or a newspaper, right? So the Buddha says, just try to bring your attention back to your actions. So that is to be able to monitor things. And of course we got to look into how we feel things. When you put your hands on the table, is it hard, is it soft? Know it. Know what you are doing at that particular moment. And as I said, these are the training of wisdom. You might ask, what wisdom do you get out of it? This is the first, very much the first of the wisdom, to know what you are doing at this moment. If you don't have any wisdom, you don't know what you are doing at this moment. You'll be just like a madman going around, wandering around, and going on autopilot and so on, and getting in trouble. So the second one, the Buddha mentioned, after you've used to watching the body and all this, go to the next one, watching this the feelings, the sensation which arises, hot, cold, movements and all this. And the third one the Buddha mentioned was, after that, because of this sensation, it comes emotional states. And how do you relate sensation with emotional states? You think you can or not? It's quite simple. When you see something, that's a sensation. And when you see something and we get attracted to it, that is the beginning of emotions. Because the emotion is going to like, going to love and so on. Supposing going back to those thing of going to partnership and all this, you get a lover or something. How do people get lovers? How many of you have fallen in love before? Goodness. Yeah, the rest are all candidates for monks.
Yeah, yeah. Nuns. I'm the honest one.
All right. Now, how do people fall in love? Normally, it's a person meet person. I don't want to call it boy meet girl nowadays. You know, they're not supposed to be gender specific. So a person meets a person. Now, first thing is they catch sight of the person. The eyes come to contact with the other thing. And if you come to the contact, and there arises not a good sensation, means no. Or there arises neutral sensation. Okay, doesn't matter. There arises this good sensation. What's next? Attraction, right? Attachment. Look again. Look again. And you see how the attachment goes, right? And the more you look, the more, you see, that's where that desire comes up, right? And desire is natural in us, right? And this, because this natural desire we have, then you're going to get into trouble later on. Falling in love is a troublesome thing. Okay? Now, when you get that, the desire arises. What happens? And there's this intention coming up. It's a subtle thing now. Emotional states of one thing, loving. And then you start to affect the actions. You start to, if you don't know them, sometimes you want to make sure that we are also attractive, go back and put more gel in your hair and wear nice clothes and just put it in front of the person, right? Getting all those things, right? It's the typical the animal courtship dance, right? Or some people are more bold, they go there, hey beauty, what are you, are you free tonight or whatever, sometimes you get a slap in the face. So anyway, there's this attraction, and attraction is actually attachment. If you get attracted to that person, and if the person is attracted to you again, then there is this bond. Right? Then there is this mutual attraction and mutual attachment. Now, if you are attached to the person and the person is not attached to you, you get dukkha. Right? Straight away, one dukkha. How to do it? You start to think of schemes and so on. Eventually, you try and try, and then what happens? The attachment eventually will turn to hatred if the person really dismiss you. Okay, so that is the way. Yeah? Now, when you got these two attachments coming in, then there are more problems. Yeah? One person have only one problem. Right? When you get two persons, four problems. Right? One is how to get along with yourself. How to get along with yourself? Two problems already. How do you get along with that? And how do you get along with that? Right? So your problem goes times four. Right? So, I'm not saying that you shouldn't fall in love, right? But if you want to fall in love the conventional way, right? Following you see what these Hollywood people have been falling in love, then you get problem. Right? You see how many of them change partners very often. Right? One of them, hear latest news, somebody who was an ex-Hollywood star suddenly cheated on his wife, blah, blah, blah. Right? See, these are problems. Right? So, it's not that we cannot fall in love. If a wise person were to fall in love, guess what she should be doing? I'm talking about falling in love with the emotional state. Right? There's sensation, there's emotion coming up. at this emotional stage, they should be able to be aware of it. Aware of it. Right? And don't try to get this emotional stage to take over the whole thing. Right? A lot of people, when they fall in love, they lose track of everything. Right? We've got to be sensible. Right? And the Buddha's teaching is always bringing us back into this sensibility. You fall in love, you've got to know that some days you might change your mind, they might change their mind. Right. And also when you already hitch up, you know, sign your freedom off in the registry, just be aware also that one day they might die, you might die. Right. Relationship might go sour. Just be aware of that. Right. It doesn't mean that we cannot have good relationship. It's how to maintain a good relationship. Right. So the Buddha talked about loving kindness and all those things, and which you can put in for your other thoughts by other people, give them the problem. So you talk about this loving kindness. Now, we can treat our partners with loving kindness. Normally, a lot of people won't treat the partners with loving kindness because they are so overcome by the emotions. Right? They want to treat them as their property. They want to control and all these things. And these are the source of dukkha. So going back to what I was talking just now, number one, body. Number two, be aware of the sensation of feelings. The third one is emotional feelings. That is emotional feelings of wanting, the desire, not wanting, the hatred. Right? So just be aware that when we are pushed too much, we are able to come back. If you push too much, you are able to come back. That's initially. But eventually, when you are really well trained, then it's much easier for us to be detached from a lot of things. And when you are detached from a lot of this attachment, then it's much easier for us to get out of the state of suffering. Right? The more we are attached to things, the more suffering we get. Then this last one will be, the Buddha asks us to be aware of the things like negative and positive things. Right? Negative things, just be aware of being our strong desire. Wanting things, don't want things. Our negative emotions, our anger, fears, worries, disappointments, and all these things which are affecting us. Just know that it's coming up. Knowing also our weaknesses, right? Like our laziness, our prone to getting bored, getting tired of things, right? And also our restlessness, our mind when fleeting everywhere. And of course, knowing the nature of our mind, being that we always have questions which we don't want to find the answer. That means doubt. Like keep on doubting. A lot of people doubt without wanting to find out. It must be like that, must be like that. And nearly half of our time we spend in doing that. Because that kind of doubt, when it's translated, is speculation. When you hear a sound, what's that? Oh, it's a bomb. I'm quite sure it's a bomb. Right? Or maybe your friend don't come out, don't turn up for appointment. Huh, the idiot must have gone somewhere else. Right? Or something like that. Or he might run over by a bus, start panicking. Right? All these things is that sort of, you talk about speculation, it's a result of your doubt. Right? And there are very serious doubts as well. The doubts which we say is skeptical doubt sometimes. Right? You know that the thing is right, but it's still doubt. It's all right to doubt, to have your doubts, but you try to clarify it. But when it's already clarified, you still say but, then that is another kind of doubt. And there are a lot of them attached to the teachings of the Buddha as well. Because when the Buddha says impermanence, I'm quite sure a lot of people will be doubting that impermanence. I'm the same person, how can you say that I'm different? So, this sort of things, we need to really be clear about it. And to be clear about it is to investigate into the workings of the mind. Right? And sometimes you also have doubts about our own ability. Right? When you sit down to meditate, you tend to open your eyes and say, okay, that fellow is sitting like that. How can he sit like that for half an hour or 1 hour? That's for me, in 2 minutes I might be moving around. So, I can't do it. Right? The Buddha says, everybody can do it. It's just that your mind is not settled, therefore you can't do it. So that is the negative side of it. But we also got positive side. We also got positive emotions, right? So this positive emotion will give rise to a lot of other things as well. We may feel happy when we are doing certain things, but the sort of bliss we get. We may feel that we want to investigate things further. That's a very, very positive thing. Right? We may develop peacefulness and tranquility. We develop more mindfulness and so on. There are a few things there. And slowly, if we start to work on these things, then we are on our way to what we call enlightenment. To a lot of people, enlightenment is something which is of the next world. But as far as the Buddhists go, as far as the Buddha goes, enlightenment is yours and mine. But there's only a thin line between unenlightened and enlightened. The moment you are able to clear your mind, that means, you know, getting a lot of wisdom, then you cross over and become enlightened. An enlightened person physically is no different from an unenlightened person. And we look all the same. It's just that mental behavior is a lot different. Okay, any more, any other questions to talk about this? Well, good. Enlightened. So I've given you quite a lot of example about this positive and negative things. Right? It's when you develop wisdom, you are able to see the positive and the negative things very clearly. The clarity is there, you know, we know for sure that it is. Right, so, in the case when we have already developed wisdom, or while we are in the path of process of developing wisdom, there are a lot of other things which we can help us. Right? Now, a lot of times when we when we feel that wrong things are being done to us by other people, what do we do? When somebody has cheated you or did something, stole your things, what do we normally do? Now, normally, for an untrained mind, we carry the burden. Say, supposing somebody has taken my things and never returned the things to me, right, without me knowing. Then when I find out, what happens? So I bear this grudge against the person. Right? Maybe you might have a fight over this, go there and blah, 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 talk about things. And then I come back, I still think, oh, he shouldn't have taken my things, he shouldn't have taken my things. Right? And every time I think of it, what happens? It grows bigger and bigger. So when you start to have that is a burden which you've got to carry. And the burden gives us that dukkha. Same thing with many other things. A lot of people may be being slighted by other people. Or we may be insulted by other people. Now, when we say insulted by other people, what happens? It's actually we accept the insult. You want to insult me, if I refuse to accept your insult, I can never be insulted. You can say all sorts of things. What happens? If I peel my potato, you talk, I peel my potato, you. Now that is a very well trained person, right? A not well trained person is, you peel potato, and say, you idiot, what? Say after that, he called me an idiot. I'm not an idiot, I'm just a clever person. So start thinking about it. When you start to think about it, it gets worse and worse. Then you call the fellow over and say, why do you call me this, blah blah blah, have a quarrel over it, right? And out of what? A very, very simple thing. A word with two syllables, right? Idiot. Out of that, because you identify the thing as something insulting, therefore we have this problem. Right? And we sometimes, to a lot of people, they carry this burden from A, person B, person C, person D. A lot of people, right? And usually, he might forget for a short while until he comes to an incident where she reminds him of that. Right? It comes up again. So, if somebody borrows $5 from me 15 years ago, right? So, and you don't return the money. You write letters to him, and say, where's my money? He still won't return to you. You keep on boiling inside there. And all of a sudden, one day you see the person. Then it triggers up that bad memory. Right? And when you have the bad memory, you go there, hey, where's my money? He says, what? I didn't owe you anything. Worse still. So it came down, getting worse and worse. And after that, he goes away. As happy as ever, you are there carrying this burden. Now, if you are not wise, you carry the burden. If you are wise, what should you do? A really wise person should do it, would do it this way. I've lent him the money, he doesn't return me the money. He didn't return the money, that's all. He just let go of the whole thing and keep on going with his life. Right? After all, I mean, if you look at it in another way, $5 is just a small amount of money. Right? And we get a lot of problems with these small little things. And everywhere we pick up small little things. Right? So a wise person will say, okay, the money is not given to me. And every time he sees, he thinks of it, he says, okay, that's a thought, I let go of it. So where's the problem? But you start to go and let the thing go inside there. Every time you think about it, it's just like bringing out the plant and let it fruit again. It takes only a few moments. Fruit again, more seeds drop in. Instead of one problem, you now get four or five problems now. So this is the way we normally act. So we should learn how to let go. And letting go of a grudge, right, is what we call forgiveness. In the past, if you take any, what's the word, umbrage, right, on what other people do to us, if you say that they do something wrong to us, if you can say, I let go of it, I forgive the thing, then you don't carry the burden anymore, you feel a lot lighter. So that's what one of the contributions to our wisdom practice. But the forgiveness or letting go has got to be genuine. Once I read long ago, it's about this very rich person in France. He got a big empire, and then his two sons cheated him. My son's cheating him, and he got really upset. It's not that he cheated every cent of him, but he still got plenty, he still got trillions left, right? But the son cheated him, and then he called a reporters conference, or a press conference, right? Being a rich person, and famous one. He says, yeah, I forgive my son, but God will never forgive him, will never forgive them. That means it shows you that he's never really forgiven. So when our forgiving is, we must make sure that the forgiving is real. Suppose you don't have to go and embrace a person and say, I forgive you for all the things. Right? Because if he owes me, say, $5, I keep on carrying the problem. It's my problem, not his problem. Right? And he might have forgotten that he owes me $5. So supposing, when I see him, I say, oh, my dear friend, I forgive you for owing me $5. You might think that I'm mad. Right? No, the forgiveness comes from yourself, inside here. Don't use the word forgiveness either. I just let go. Letting go will bring forth this forgiveness. But being not enlightened, we still got that holding back sometimes. Like you say, I forgive or I let go. 3 minutes later, comes back again. Let go. Then I see a $5 note in front of me. That $5. Think of it, let go. Right? Keep doing that. And that is the training. When you talk about Buddhism, it is precisely just that, letting go. Letting go has also got connection with our let it be. You don't go and change it. You change the situation here, not changing the situation out there. So it comes, we let go. The fact remains that he still owes you $5. But your attachment is no longer there. So when you talk about let it be, it's just like that. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, or the discourse on the foundation of mindfulness, The Buddha said, the practitioner will sit there, or just be aware of coming and going of his mind, what things, the phenomena happen in his mind, the phenomena dissolving, coming and going, and not being attached to it. And not being attached to things is very similar to let it be. There are things which comes up. If we attach to it, we are not letting it be. We change it. We get it stronger. If you want to let things be, just be aware that it's happening. Look at it. Let go of it. Now, letting go is a very, very important part of the Buddha's training. In mindfulness training, we always train people to let go. Now, just now you did. When you hear something, I know that you are distracted. What do you do? Let go. Come back to your breathing. And we do it a few, many, many times every time we sit down, letting go, letting go, letting go. It becomes a habit. And when the other importance arises in us, when we start to get angry, we get worried, and jealousy comes out and all these things, if we are aware of it, then we know, let go. Come back to your breathing. Let go. Go back to your having your shower. You're brushing your teeth, your hatred comes up, okay, let go. Keep on brushing your teeth. So this is the thing. When you're living at this moment, you'll be aware of what you're doing at this moment, and if anything of the sort comes up in us, then we should be able to identify it and let go of it. So that's basically the training. And when we start to do more and more of these things, then that's where wisdom arises. That wisdom allows us to see things. That wisdom allows us to purify our action. The actions of not getting angry, not getting upset, not getting jealous, that is actions out of a wise person. It may not make you make plenty of money. It may not make you more popular with the boys or girls. It may not make you fly. But definitely, it works up here. And that is the whole thing which the sages have taught in the past. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is another thing which can train us in our wisdom. And that is gratitude. You might think there's nothing to do with this, but all these things adds up. Right? When you talk about a gratitude, gratitude, if we do it properly, it brings up the positive emotions in us. It brings up good feelings between two persons. In some practices in Buddhism, towards the end of the meditation, we always have this reflection of gratitude to the teacher, and then go back to the masters who bring all these things down, and eventually to the Buddha. That feeling of gratitude. Now, that feeling of gratitude can do a lot of things to us. Because most of the time, when we may not be ungrateful, but we forget good things being done. Right? And having the sense of gratitude is to remember something good. That you are grateful for something good being done to you. And that's a good reminder, because when you start to feel that there's a lot of good being done to us, then at least sometimes later we can transfer this goodness to other people. You've got to know kindness. And knowing the kindness will allow us to generate more kindness. It's no point for you to sit down there, I want to be loving kindness, metta, metta. No? If you start to have gratitude, you start to have the one thing to give, the dana, then that kindness can be given out. Otherwise, it's just by your ideas only. I give out loving kindness, you idiot, I love you, I love you, you stupid fella. So, I mean, that's not real kindness. The real kindness is when you know that you have already received these good things and you send it to other people. And gratitude is to acknowledge a lot of things. You've got to be aware that favors people done for us, and we feel good about it, and in turn we should be able to give some of this goodness to other people. So for a lot of Buddhist teachers, you know, especially for me, I teach out of gratitude. It's no point for me to bow to the Buddha and then having no gratitude at all. My gratitude goes back to that person. It's through the teachers. And I don't only have one teacher, but I got many, many teachers. So every one of them I'm grateful to. Some I don't even remember how they look like. But you know that that person is there to teach. It's given me a lot of kindness. So in my turn, I will give this kindness to other people. So that's how we transmit goodness from person to person. This world is full of a lot of badness, as we call it. People who are hateful things and all this. And once you start to be grateful and be able to bring out this goodness within human beings, right, this kindness, then we're starting to make the world a lot better, right, more happier place to be in. So I single out these two because it's very, very important in Buddhism to be forgiving. And if you are extremely wise, then there's no need to forgive because you don't bear grudge anymore. But if you have to, if you have grudge which you are bearing and it proves to be a burden to you, then learn to be able to give up slowly. Don't give up straight away. Do it slowly, step by step. Do it when you can. Don't force yourself. We can't force people to forgive. But through our own, through seeing our own mind, our own attachment and all those things, maybe we can work on the forgiveness. Okay, any questions so far? Yes?
Yeah. You said that let go, right? Let go of that. But the fact that the person owes you money. So what if you really need that money?
Okay, ask for him.
See, the thing is, you see, there are two things. One is the actual fact, right? The owing of the money. The other one is you add to the fact. You add the hatred to the owing of the money. Okay? So when somebody owes me money, if I need the money, I say, oi, give me my money. You see, the Buddhists are dumb but not stupid. So we can ask for it. Even when you feel that, you know, if a person has done something bad to you, you know, somebody sit down there and they hate you so much that they come and make noise and all these things, right, to disturb you on your assignment and studies, you can tell them, okay, please don't make the noise. If they still want to make the noise, what should they do? They say, let go, your word doesn't work, call the police. But you've got to make sure that all these things are done through our calmness. If your mind is starting to get angry, you will tell them the wrong thing and then you end up having a fight, right? Number one. Number two is you get really angry, you forget to call the police. You start to do all sorts of things with this. And so all these things, the emotional states, clouds our judgment, it clouds our decisions as well.
When I'm quite sure some of you can get very angry sometimes or very fearful sometimes. When you get really angry, you don't judge things very well. Okay, any other questions?
Just thinking, because some people tend to worry too much, then to some extent, that, you know, person might have depression or can't sleep. Things like this. If you see people having this situation, what are the best advice for them?
When that's why I said just now, somewhere in the beginning, I said we can't do things for other people. Right? If they are wise enough, they could have learned it a long time ago. Right? Like you guys. I'm quite sure none of you guys will suffer from depression if you practice properly. Okay? Because you have already allowed time to listen to the Dharma, you might have got time to do some meditation and all things, be able to be aware of your mind. And so you won't go into the stage of acute depression. But for people who do not, who has not training,
They've got problems. But when you come to the having acute problems like that, we cannot do anything at all. Other than to tell them, okay, you know, come learn how to calm down. But I know of people who are depressed, you tell them that. They say, yeah, yeah, I'll do it, but they never do it. So there's nothing much we can do except, you know, to give them, if they're depressed, okay, just give them some helpful, you know, shoulder to lean on, or give them a helping hand, that's all. But for us, it's very important, because when you start to do your mental training, you're actually avoiding this depressive state. Now, supposing you're anxious on your, you know, coming to exam time and you haven't studied and all things, you really get sweat, and the cold can be cold sweat, and your body is so tense up you can't sleep. Okay, if you supposing you have done your meditation in the past, then you can help them. Get an okay, come and sit with me. In breath, out breath, in breath, out breath, let go, in breath, out breath, let go. Just go through the whole of this meditation process, and for the time being, they will be alright. And then maybe, you know, explain to them that, you know, this is through your attachment and all this thing. That worrying about it is no use. Go and study. So we are supposed to be the most practical and pragmatic persons on earth. Right, the Buddhists. We don't tell you to believe in things and all these things. No. We don't do things which, supposedly, we don't do things which waste our time. When they talk about meditation to you, it's not that you must sit down cross-legged and all these things. You train there and then you go into your daily life. Right? And your daily life, when you know your actions, you know your intentions, you know your mental actions and all these things while you are doing things, that is also working towards wisdom. Right? It's very important. Right? A lot of people are weekend meditators or once a week meditators. And I always tell them, you can take another 3 more lifetimes, still you won't get anything much. Because they go and do everything, and let the mind go wild, and then every Tuesday night, okay, 2 hours, sit like that. It's good, they're not doing it, right? But it takes a lot longer. So if you can, right? I mean, it doesn't take much. While you're waiting the bus stand, train your mind. Don't pretend and sit down on the bus stand there and cross-legged and close your eyes and put your beads on your hands and all this. It's just a waste. It's not that. It's not the showy type of meditation. It's just being aware. Yeah. When you're standing there, the bus comes, look what happens in your mind. There are a lot of thoughts coming in. You know, positive thoughts, negative thoughts. Just be aware of that. Don't judge it. Just know it. Then that's daily, you know, when you have a cup of tea and so on, and later on when you've got more skill, when you're talking to people, what happens in you? Are you full of friendliness or not? Or are you antagonistic? Whatever it is, just know it. And the Buddha says, didn't say change. Because you force yourself to change, it comes to nothing. Or you've got negative things. The Buddha says, be aware of it. And when you start to be aware of it, then sooner or later you find the results yourself. And as I said before, come to the stage, you get a choice. And you can pick for yourself whether you're looking at trouble or no trouble. So this is very much a personal thing. And no matter what we do, we cannot practice for our friend. We can influence the friends to come and practice with us, but we cannot do things for them. It's very different from the traditional Buddhist, where a family has got a grandmother, right? And only the grandmother goes to the Buddhist temple to pray. And when she prays for everybody. So we can't do that. We cannot transfer that sort of things to other people. So when we start to be aware of it, then when you have got time, when you're still young, you've got leisure time and all these things, do it. I tell you, if it's more difficult when you get older to do your meditation. Young people can meditate a lot better. Because old people, we have accumulated too much gunk and too much burden. Right? We cannot give it up fast enough. You guys have got less burden than I have. Right? Every time, because the whole thing is in living, we got a lot of burdens coming in. The Chinese talk about the monk with the bag, right?
They go around and pick them back and things, all the gunk, and throw into the bag. So the longer you throw, the more, the heavier the bag is. So I've seen people, you know, when it comes to about 60 or 70 years old, I told them to go and meditate. They said, look at me. It doesn't work with me. You know it. Because it's going to take a lot of effort. Whereas for you guys, it's a lot easier. Just be simple thing. Just be aware of things. Be aware of things. Okay?
Can we say that worry?
Depends. I mean, worrying, actually, you put it, I would say, it's a waste of time. But it doesn't mean that, you see, sometimes you got to be aware of what you don't do. Right? Supposing, you know, you live in a very dangerous area, you got to worry about, you know, when the bomb is coming down. Right? So the thing is, but you don't add the real concept, the mental component to the real thing. Sometimes you sit down there, some people, they are quite all right. They got enough to eat, enough to... They start to worry about, you know, when the money is going away. Then they're going to become poor. That worrying is not necessary. Going back to your students, you study well, you put your assignments in well, you set your exams. After sitting exam, go and go and watch movies and go to parties. Worrying doesn't serve anything. So we got to be, when you start to be more aware of things, you know that this component. Just like in a pain. When we got pain, when we actually, you know, for example, when we broke a bone, there's a pain already, a real physical pain. But a lot of pain we add on to it. There's a worrying pain. So try to take away the worrying pain and the physical pain. The real pain is only the physical pain. So this is the way, you know, we should look at it. Now when I was young, you know, we used to have this injection. Every time they got cholera in Malaysia, we used to have cholera, you know, every 2 years. So when they got cholera season, we all got to line up. You know, the nurse would come with a needle. And those days, you know, no AIDS, nothing. So one needle jab for over 17 people. It can be very, very painful sometimes. But anyway, a lot of, you know, we are asked to roll our sleeves up and then walk past. And a lot of kids, they don't worry. They can let go of the pain, mental pain. They go there, the flood jack. Okay, go. Some, they already accumulated mental pain somewhere around the queue there. As they walk past, you know, being 7 or 8 years old, they start to cry. So is it real pain or not real pain? So if you are clear about this sort of thing, then we try not to add this mental component to it. You see, like, going back to relationships, right? When you have a relationship, then we start to have this love. Now, if we are not careful with this kind of love, then what's going to develop next? Jealousy. So just be aware of it. Friendship is the same thing. Right? All these things, so you can see beyond that. Don't let them affect you. Then you find that relationships get a lot better. All right.